Welcome to another edition of Monday Morning Radio, now in its 14th season of providing all-you-can-eat business wisdom.
It's Monday morning. I'm Maxwell Rotbart. I'm too young to remember the commercial that you're about to hear, but my parents, Dean and Talia Rotbart, who were living on the East Coast when this aired in 1989, remember it and many others like it very well. The speaker is Cy Sims, founder of the pioneering Sims chain of off-price, brand-name fashion stores. At its peak, the Sims chain operated 46 stores across 16 states, generating annual sales approaching $350 million. Sims opened its first store in 1959 and remained in business for more than five decades. In 1983, Cy Sims' daughter, Marcy, our special guest this week, was named president of Sims Corporation, becoming the youngest female president of a New York Stock Exchange-listed company. I'll tell you more about Marcy and Sims after this short commercial break. This is Marcy's father explaining why the word sale is not in the Sims lexicon.
At Sims, you'll never see this word, because Sims represents at off-price over 200 world-famous designer and brand names in men's, women's, and children's clothing. You can always buy men's current, nationally advertised $290 suits for $159, women's $235 suits for $139. There's never a reason for a sale. At Sims, an educated consumer is our best customer.
While Sims was not the very first off-price fashion retailer, Cy and Marcy Sims defined the sector and dominated it until eventually, faced with increased competition and a soft economy, the company ran its course and closed its stores in 2011. Marcy shares her story and the story of the Sims Corporation in a new book set for release on August 26th. The book is titled Leading with Respect, Adventures of an Off-Price Fashion Pioneer. In a candid and wisdom-packed conversation with my father and co-host Dean, Marcy reflects on the hard-won lessons she has learned and offers what she's concluded is the key trait, often misunderstood, of effective leadership. You'll especially appreciate the anecdote that Marcy shares about the day she and her father stood in a suburban strip mall parking lot facing what could have been a public relations nightmare. Instead, it became one of the clearest demonstrations of the family's business philosophy, lead with respect. Marcy is president of the Cy Sims Foundation, which continues her family's philanthropic legacy, supporting charitable, educational, and cultural organizations, including the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University. The one constant in Marcy's life has been her unwavering commitment to making a positive impact on society. Now, our conversation with Marcy Sims, retail pioneer, veteran executive, philanthropist, author, who serves as a reminder for all businesses that educated consumers make the best customers.
Monday Morning Radio was produced in cooperation with Roy H. Williams, founder of The Wizard of Ads Partners and co-founder with his wife, Penny, of the nonprofit Wizard Academy. Located on a plateau high above the Texas Hill Country, the Academy is a non-traditional, non-boring school for business owners, executives, and entrepreneurs from around the world. Monday Morning Radio features interviews with unconventional owners and entrepreneurs who are putting into practice the lessons they teach at Wizard Academy. The podcast is co-hosted by the father and son team of Dean and Maxwell Rotbart. Now, here's Dean.
Marcy, it is a delight to have you on this week's podcast. I have to tell you that in the Rotbart family, the Sims family is retailing royalty. We spent, no, that's true. We spent, my son Maxwell was born in New Jersey. My wife and I lived in Manhattan and New Jersey, and we knew Sims, and we mourned. I think we did, we sat Shiva for 7 days when when Sims ultimately didn't survive. But it is terrific to have you. You have, not only are you retailing royalty, but you have done very, very impressive work in philanthropy. You have been a leading voice for women in business, and now you are the author of a excellent book. It's readable, charming, and actionable. And so, again, it makes it delightful to have you as a guest on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dean. What a generous and heartwarming, really, the comments about Sims, a heartwarming introduction. Thank you.
It's also, Marcy, heartfelt. I know you listen to at least a couple podcasts, but I don't go out of my way to do that for every guest. I do that for very special guests, and I count you among them. Look, we are going to talk for the preponderance of this podcast about your new book, Leading with Respect, Adventures of an Off-Price Fashion Pioneer. But I actually want to start with something else. The whole premise of this podcast, and the way, Marcy, we have attracted a large and loyal audience of business owners, is we try to, every week, give them actionable advice, insights that they can apply, or at least that they can think about. Plenty to think about when it comes to respect. But before we get to respect, I want to talk about the Sims motto: an educated consumer is our best customer. And I was going to say to you, okay, well, so that has to apply to all businesses, not just to retailers. Do you believe that that still holds true today, regardless of the industry?
You know, Dean, I think it holds more true today, because in this age of everyone being able to click to do their own research, it really is, in many ways, going back to the buyer beware days that we had before consumerism, where there's an assumption that you as a consumer have at your disposal a great deal of information. And if you care, you're going to do a lot of the research before you ever get to making a purchase. So whether it's starting a business or making a purchase of paper for your copy machines, you had better do a lot of research before you make a decision. The educated consumer, I think, is, to my dad's credit, I remember my suggestion was to use the word an informed consumer, because I thought educated was too elitist. And he said, no, you, Marcy, I believe that this is aspirational. The educated consumer is an aspirational. Why? Because do you ever have all of the information that you need to make an educated decision? Most likely not. So being an educated consumer is most definitely, he was brilliant in that. It is an aspirational but necessary discipline today.
Was your father the individual who came up with the slogan? Was that a ad agency someplace that presented it and your dad said, terrific, it's exactly what I was thinking?
To my knowledge, I mean, I wasn't working at the company in that time. We're talking about 1974. So I was doing my own thing after college and doing other jobs. But from what I remember, it was his idea. And so it really came out of his experience of dealing with customers. That was his favorite thing to do, to convince customers that he was sharing as much as he knew about the shirt that they were buying. Remember, when Sims opened, he was selling irregulars. He was selling overproduction. He was asking the consumer to buy something that they might have seen a misweave in. But he was saying to them, I want you to see that, Miss Weave. I'm not pulling anything over on you. You can see this, Miss Weave, and you could also save 70% on the purchase. Go up to 34th Street and go to Macy's, and you'll see the same Gantt shirt back in those days for $7. At Sims, you're paying $2.99. Yeah. That was his message.
So, Marcy, there are two ways that one might interpret the slogan. And again, with the idea in mind of giving some actionable advice to people who are listening to this who have their own businesses, one way is to say, we're going to look for educated customers, that we are better off finding educated customers. That's one way of looking at it. The second way of looking at it is, we're going to go out of our way to educate our customers. The customer's going to click on our website, they're going to walk into our store, they're going to give us a call, and we're going to educate them. They don't have to be mutually exclusive, but in the way that you today, on reflection, look at the importance of an educated customer, an educated consumer, is it trying to find customers who are smart enough to recognize the value that the company has in its products and services, or is it the company's responsibility to take uneducated consumers and explain to them the assets that the company offers?
I thought when I joined Sims, when we had our stores in the tri-state area, that it was our responsibility as a company to educate, not only because of the necessity of what we were selling, but I think if you look, Dean, at the universe that a startup company has to evaluate before investing in a startup, which would you rather do? Take a gamble that customers are going to, you'd be satisfying a need that they have? Or do you want to tell them that you have something that is going to scratch their itch and explain why? I think you really want the universe where you're constantly converting people to understanding why they need to be your customer. What's in it for them?
So, Marcia, I'm looking at you as kind of a ad hoc director for the companies that are listening to the podcast. So as an ad hoc director, I'm going to ask you a director level question. By the way, you have been on many, many boards, for-profit boards, nonprofit boards. After your father, you became the CEO of the family business. So you're pretty, and your book reflects the fact that you're a savvy business person. So here's the question. When you want to educate your customer, your client, there's always the risk that you don't have the goods on every potential parameter. Maybe your pricing is better. I'm not suggesting Sims. I'm just giving you scenarios. Maybe your pricing is better, but your quality is not. Maybe your quality is better, but your customer service lacks, your return policies. Sometimes when my wife and I shop online, before we buy something from a new retailer, we look at their return policy. And often their return policy is kind of onerous. We have to pay for it. There may be a fee on top of it. And so that offsets it. So if you want to educate your clients or your customers, how much education do you give them? And is it sufficient to say, we excel in one of three or four areas, but not all three or four areas?
Well, in order to grow, you need to explain if you're not excelling in three or four areas, and there are four areas you have to excel in to succeed, you better have a good reason and be able to explain why you are not excelling in those areas. You can compensate for that by explaining to your customer, we've just started to look into return policies. At this point, the return policy requires that we need you to pay for the postage. Okay, but we're going to be taking that out of the margin that we're making on the good. You need to explain it to the customer. We're not in the kind of universe today that you can even assume that the customer isn't educated. As a business, you need to assume that your customer knows everything there is about what you're selling, the services provided with what you're selling, the kind of policies you have. Everything is a comparison, and it's so easy to compare. This is not the days when you had to go into a car and go to different stores to comparison shop. All you need to do is have good eyesight and click. So you better be 100% transparent. And you also should tell your customers before they even tell you what you know to be a non-competitive, if there are any, non-competitive part of your offering and what you're doing to correct that.
Marcy, let me give you one realistic example, and then we will segue to the topic of respect. But what I hear frequently from listeners to the podcast, and also from guests on the podcast, and that is, look, we are a smaller business. I'm giving you a homogenized version. We have 75 employees. We have a dozen retail outlets. We really can't compete on the variety of products that we have available, and in many cases, even with on pricing against the giant retailers that we're going up against. But what we can compete on is we know our product better, particularly, let's say, somebody who is in the electronics or computer business. We can't compete with Apple stores, but we have great customer service. Now, from my perspective, an educated consumer would be a consumer that says, I value customer service sufficiently that I'm willing to accept less of a variety or even pay somewhat more. In my personal life, Marcy, I am willing to pay more for good customer service, even if I could buy the product cheaper, for example, on Amazon, where I can go in and I can talk to a salesperson who knows what he or she is talking about. So that, again, comes back to the idea of saying, if I want to educate the consumer, do I confess, look, we can't compete with Apple on price. We can't compete with them on the variety of product, but we have better customer service. We have personalized customer service. And by the way, this really comes true in things like personal finance consulting, where I'm a personal finance consultant. I can't compete with, let's say, American Express or Prudential, but you get service here. So it seems to me that there probably is a way to educate your consumer without having to hit all four bases.
Right. But what you're saying is, I understand why you're choosing me, the smaller financial advisory company that might not have, because I remember the fact that you once had a fishing lodge on Lake George, and the reason that you gave that up was because of an onerous repayment schedule on a mortgage, or it's that the connective tissue of service is really relationships. I mean, it helps to have a website where you don't have to spend 20 minutes figuring out how to move things around once you've logged in. But really, it's about the human relationships. So once you define what you're offering, and if that for you, for your company, is service, then really understand how deeply you have to go and how many boxes you have to check to provide that benefit that overrides the benefit of not being J.P. Morgan.
Yes, well said. See, I know, Marcy, you would be a great director on any of the boards of any of the companies that are among my listening audience. All right, let's talk about this great book, Leading with Respect, Adventures of an Off-Price Fashion Pioneer. Now, I just want you to know, because I'm smarter than I make myself out to be, and that is, I wanted to let our listeners see how smart you are to understand the wisdom that goes into this book, Leading with Respect. So My first question about it is, why did you write Leading with Respect? Do you think that respect is a underappreciated or misunderstood value by large numbers of businesses?
You know, Dean, I don't think it's misunderstood, and I don't think it's undervalued. What I think is it's not practiced. And the fact that it was foundational to Sims and it was part of our practice, it was part of our mission, it was part of our culture, it never left anyone's awareness, whether we were dealing with a customer, we were dealing with our vendors, we were dealing with our coworkers. The idea of respect is foundational to a healthy culture. And just to bring that point home, there is right now in our business and our culture, there's a thing called quiet cracking. And quiet cracking affects about a third of all employees now, according to a Gallup poll recently done. And that means that they are not fully engaged. And I believe that has to do with not feeling respected. Just imagine, you are not heard, you are not appreciated, you are not regarded in decision-making that affect your life. How can you give your all? How can you feel part of the mission? There's a disconnect there. So I believe that people understand how important respect is because we all know how good it feels when we feel respected. It's that it's not practiced.
I wonder, Marcy, whether your realization of the importance of respect is reverse engineering. And what I mean by reverse engineering is that when you reflect upon what made your father and Sims successful, even before you got to the company, when you sort of dissect it, what you discover is that it was respect. Your dad didn't have a MBA from Harvard. It's not like he took classes and they said, okay, if you want to be successful as a off-price retailer, you better respect your customer. I assume that in many ways that appreciation for respect was something that was in your dad's DNA and that he did it. He did it because it was natural for him. He didn't know any other way of doing business. And then I think you came aboard and had the epiphany that says, hey, you know what? This is not only the right way to do business, it's the right way to do business successfully. It leads to success. I believe, and especially based upon you saying that why you wrote the book, that people know the importance of respect. How do you infuse a business owner or the CEO of a company with the value that says, I'm not going to understand respect, I am going to implement it? How do you do that, Marcy?
Well, I think as a business owner, it's pretty important on many issues, but let's take respect because it's foundational. It's really important to take an inventory. And that inventory, as regards respect, should be in all the areas that I mentioned, your culture, your coworker, your customer, your vendors, your growth pattern, your banker. I mean, take whatever relationships you want that put all together, create the reality of how your business is doing, and analyze it. Take an inventory. Take an audit. Are you listening? Is your relationship, your business relationship, one in where you take as much time listening to the other person as bringing across your point so that you're heard, so that you can make the deal? What are you hearing from the other side? What are you hearing from your customers? What are you hearing from your vendors? That will tell you how to grow. That will tell you where your weaknesses are. And to my mind, growing through this experience with Sai, He used to say, we could only grow if we help our vendors grow. And in actuality, in point of fact, it was his experience that the way that he got his second and third stores were because the vendors were so happy with him and said, Cy, can you grow? Can you take more goods? Because they liked the fact that they could trust him. They liked the fact that when he said, I'm going to be paying you in 30 days, they got the check within 30 days. Whether Cy sold the goods or not, he managed to do that. And he didn't make a deal until he knew he was going to be able to do that. And our growth was organic. There was always, even though we went public, the public offering was not, the funds that were raised by the public offering were actually not used for growth at all. They were used for my father to take some, as he said, chips off the table and not keep his belt so tight. These are all quotes, Dean.
Marcy, I like this specificity of saying that the way he inspired respect, the way he showed respect for vendors was paying them within 30 days, not delaying that. Even if he hadn't sold the inventory, he paid them. Are there other specific memories you have, either of Cy or when you were CEO of Sims, of showing respect, for example, to an employee or to a customer? Anything that you reflect upon where you say, you know, my dad, I remember once there was this customer, or I remember once there was this employee who had this circumstance. And same thing for you, Marcy. Mm-hmm. Any specific anecdotes that come to mind?
Yes, there was a fairly dramatic one that my dad and I had when we advertised the opening of the store. And we had a very disciplined way in which to advertise, and it involved a great deal of expense because we used broadcast media at the time and full-page local newspapers, and that was really my job. I brought the experience of marketing and public relations to Sims. And I always tell people involved with family businesses, if you're going to join the family business, you better bring an expertise because it can't just be your last name. But going back to this experience, this store opening, we had learned that we were not going to be getting the certificate of occupancy in time to open the store, but we had started the advertising 3 days prior to getting this information. So Cy and I went to the parking lot. It was a suburban store with about 45,000 square feet, and we had enough parking according to the zoning. And lo and behold, by about 8:30, the store was supposed to open at 10. By about 8:30 in the morning, the cars started coming in to the parking lot, and we were there. We decided that we were going to give each person who showed up, we had the paper right there. We did it right on the hood of a car, and we wrote them coupons. And we wrote them $10 at the time. We wrote them, this was some years ago, $10 mm-hmm. coupons. And we said, we will honor this if you come in, and we hope you come in, and we want to deeply apologize for inconveniencing you, for making this part of your day not what you intended. And this, I'm sure, contributed to our reception in this new community. This was really a brand new community. We had never done business in this community before. And that's a kind of vivid one because it was a pretty dramatic thing. But there were certainly other times. I think the way we hire people and the whole hiring process is one in which there's an opportunity to practice respect and to understand the listening process of hiring and evaluating not only people's experience. For example, at Sims, it didn't matter if you were in clothing sales. It mattered what your integrity was. It mattered what your communication skills were. It mattered what your curiosity was, your compassion was. That would make you a great ambassador for Sims. We knew as we expanded that not being in the community meant that anyone that walked into a store, that store manager was Mr. Sims or Ms. Sims. So that person had better have respect and be able to communicate and have the commitment and the compassion that we would have shown if we were there ourselves. And therefore, in the hiring process, you're looking for those characteristics. And usually, you can learn how to be respectful, but it's really difficult if you don't have within your family, within whatever kind of religious training or training that you've gotten in your employment training, if there aren't ways that you've been rewarded for being respectful. And I would say more people than not have had that experience, but there's still a lot who haven't.
After this short break, we will continue with this week's guest, Marcy Sims, retail pioneer, veteran executive, philanthropist, and author.
Hi, I'm Maxwell Rothbard, author of All You Can Eat Business Wisdom, with a quick scoop of leadership advice that you can use right now. In my book, Small Business Expert Ramon Ray, host of the Rundown with Ramon podcast, shares this golden nugget. If you can get prospects to smile, you're more likely to convert them to customers. Why? Because smiles make you and your brand more memorable. You'll find more than 100 actionable insights like this across 21 exclusive chapters featuring business legends including Ken Blanchard, Charles Duhigg, Jen Sincero, Roy H. Williams, and Tom Ziegler. Grab your copy on Amazon for just $29.95. All You Can Eat Business Wisdom, a buffet of practical strategies. Fill your plate and come back for seconds.
We continue now with host Dean Rothbart and this week's guest, Marcy Sims, author of Leading with Respect, Adventures of an Off-Price Fashion Pioneer.
Something that jumped out at me from your book that I've had different leadership experts on the podcast, but I can't recall any of them ever saying the same thing, and I was impressed by it, which is that part of leading with respect is showing respect for people's time. I thought that was fascinating. And in fact, from my religious upbringing, one of the biggest crimes, if you will, is wasting somebody's time because you can never get back to them. So I thought that was very interesting in terms of leading with respect. Do you want to take a minute and just elaborate on that a little bit, please?
Sure, and I appreciate you pointing that out, because as we grew, one of the things as recognizing the kind of pressures that we all have in our lives, one of the things that as opening stores in the suburbs, you know, the amount of errands that people have to do. And we didn't want people to come to a Sim store and say, "Where's the underwear? Where's the 42 regular sport coats?" We never changed the location of the items. Once a store was set up, that's the way the store stayed. So when you came into the front door, you knew exactly where to go. You didn't have to waste a minute. And that doesn't mean that it's not an exciting environment. You have other ways in which to excite the customer with new merchandise, new visuals, but not moving the item's location so that the customer's walking around and wasting 10 minutes of their time. another thing about wasting time is, what is your, if you're a retailer or an online business, what is your checkout? What is it like to make a purchase? How much time am I taking to make that purchase? We all know from experience, and why we kind of default to Amazon is because they have such an extraordinarily easy checkout.
Yep.
And that is always true. I feel my time is respected by them. That's part of the equation.
I was watching, I don't know what I was watching. It must have been a short video on YouTube or Facebook. I'm not sure where I saw it, where you call, somebody's trying to call customer service and they get the automated response.
Yeah.
And no matter what they say, the automated response gets it wrong. So you're calling because you have a problem with your product. No, that's a charge, but it doesn't. Right. And I talk about wasting time. It's awful when a company or a service makes an error and trying to correct it is in fact a black hole of time. And so that's really neat. You also are an advocate in the book for bringing employees into the decision-making process. Now that's not unique, but how did that work at Sims?
Well, generally speaking, there are those decisions that you can't have the employee in on. You know, which bank is having your revolving loan is not something that employees come
right.
in on. But within the universe of anything that has to do, if the employee is in fact the touch point for a customer, they must be involved with those decisions. The reality of being the front line to the customer decision, if you're that employee, you have to be involved in the decisions of how that reality works for you, the employee, because you've got to convince the customer this is the best way to do it. So those are the kinds of decisions that the employee was always brought into at Sims.
Very interesting. Marcy, you're bright. Your dad was innovative. He was pioneering. And
yes.
then you hit some headwinds. And and no matter how trustworthy Sims was, it wasn't able to navigate past the headwinds. What are the lessons there for today's executives? One that I could say is that trustworthy is a predicate to success, but it's not the only ingredient to success. What do you tell other business owners today, other family businesses today? Here are some of the lessons we learned the hard way.
Well, first and foremost, Dean, I would advise family businesses to be very, very conscious and sensitive to who they're doing business with when it pertains to a consideration of taking on investors, a consideration of going public, or a consideration of lawyers and accountants, and who you're listening to for advice. We had at Sims decided to go public, and that was wonderful at the time. It made me the youngest female to be the president of an IPO on the New York Stock Exchange.
Wow.
The youngest female president.
Mm-hmm.
That was a wonderful experience for the whole company and family when we went public. But we should not have stayed public, as we became not a medium cap, but a micro cap in the world of companies worth $1 billion+. We should have gone private. In the cautionary tales of a merger, my advice is to try to merge with something that's not only of equal size, but maybe smaller, so that your business advisors can see you as the future for additional business, as opposed to your being the smaller fish or the guppy, and they don't see you as the entity that's going to create future business. I know that sounds cynical, but it's what I live through.
You, just for others who are listening and may not have yet read the book, but they will, Leading with Respect. Sims, when Marcy was there, when she was in charge, acquired Filene's. And Filene's went back to maybe 1908 or something, to the early 1900s, and in some ways was a progenitor of off-price retailing, although not in the way that your father, Cy, had done it. And I guess there were other issues with Filene's, including cultural clashes between the two companies.
Absolutely, yes. Filene's was an esteemed early department store and really reigned in the city of Boston for years. And they created this idea that if things didn't sell on the upper levels, it could go to the basement. Mm-hmm. And they created an entity called Filene's Basement that had been broken out into its own stores. And the idea was sold to some investors, and was one group of investors sold Filene's Basement to another group of investors. And by the time it was something that came to Sims, they were having some difficulties, but they still had a great following of young women, 30 plus new moms, that kind of following. They had a terrific dress department. And this was something that Sims felt would really add to our market share. Young women was not an area that we ever really made the impact like we did in men's clothing. So the acquisition of Filene's not only was not going to be expensive for us because we could purchase it with our revolving credit, but it also it made so much sense. Our directors loved it. Our shareholders loved it. Even our activist shareholders, which we already had by this time, loved it, because being a microcap and me being a female CEO made us, unfortunately, so visible that we were kind of low-hanging fruit for these activist shareholders who idolized Carl Icahn and wanted to take over a company and show what they could do, even though they knew nothing about retailing. So there was a lot going for us with this acquisition, but it wasn't what it appeared to be.
I'm going to segue for a minute here. I appreciate that. I want you to talk a little bit about philanthropy and the Sims Foundation. It seems that the foundation pursues some wonderful missions. Just tell us a little bit about it.
Well, when we went public, one of the things my dad wanted to do beyond taking chips off the table was to start a foundation. And in fact, we had a secondary offering in 1997 that got the company to be below 50% owned by the family in the secondary offering. And all of the proceeds of the secondary offering went into the Cy Sims Foundation. And one of the things that we always did in the retail business, wherever we had a store, was to involve management in what the charities were that the manager and the coworkers in the store, what they thought we should be involved in the community. And as a result of that, some of the things we got involved in, childhood diabetes, Parkinson's disease, some real at the very start of these kinds of engagements that philanthropy was doing with the walks and the telethons and all of that. Well, once we didn't have the stores, we really focused in on those areas where we had already a relationship with the not-for-profits and where we could make some what we call legacy grants. And the Cy Sims Foundation today is involved with at least a half a dozen significant legacy grants in areas that we've made investments over the last 30 years, and we want to continue and make sure it continues. But Dean, going back to asking me about why I wrote the book, it actually has to do with one of our legacies, the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University.
Yes.
And that school, which was started by the funds from our first offering, and is now in its, it was 1988, our first class. It was started in 1985. And this is a wonderful thing for me personally. I get to meet and speak with students, and I get to listen and learn what's on their minds today. But one of the things that became very obvious to me is they didn't know who Cy Sims was. So that was one of the inspirations for the book.
Well, what I think is very touching, Marcy, is that while the brick-and-mortar Sims stores no longer exist, the legacy does, and it does in every student who goes to the business school at YU. It does in much of your other philanthropic work. And now in the book, which is Leading with Respect, it is really, it honors your father's legacy. It honors your legacy. And what I like a great deal about the book is it also provides guidance to today's leaders and people who are trying to advance their careers on how to do so. So it's nice that I don't think Blockbuster has a foundation that's still going, and I'm not sure that Sears has a foundation that's still going. But in some ways, your dad and you are continuing because of the retailing pioneers that you were. You are still touching lives today, and by proxy, some of these students, for example, will do businesses that probably show a lot of respect for their clients and customers for generations to come. So it's really quite impressive what you've accomplished.
Oh, thank you, Dean. I really take that getting back to heart. I really take that to heart, that you get the intent. And
it's a wonderful
truly,
intent.
Truly was. Thank you.
Okay, so the book will be out. The book will be out. The official date is what? Is it August?
Yeah, it's August 26th, right. And the Day of the Woman. And you can pre-order now. And you know what, Dean? What you just said would make a great review on Amazon.
Well, so, for you, I got this recorded. I can send you a transcript. I can put it on Amazon. You can put it on Amazon. When the book is out, I've already pre-ordered, so we have a hard copy. I told you before we started recording that when we encounter one another down the road, face to face, I will ask for an autograph. By the way, in case anybody's listening and they don't know, Marcy's last name is spelled Sims, S-Y-M-S, S, Sam, Y, yesterday, M, Mary, S, Sam. So Sims, Marcy Sims, go to Amazon or your favorite bookseller and look for Leading with Respect. Marcy, I respect what you've done.
Thank you, Dean. And the respect is mutual, Dean.
Well, thank you back. I am going to let you go with that. I do hope we will encounter one another before very long. My son Maxwell joins me in wishing you and our audience a great week. Thank you so much.
Listening to Monday Morning Radio with Dean Rothbart. Be sure to read and subscribe to my weekly email column, The Monday Morning Memo, at mondaymorningmemo.com, where I share my observations on the world at large, trends, tastes, marketing, advertising, small business, whatever else is on my mind. This is Roy H. Williams.
Good luck, all the best. We'll hear from you again.